Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live this afternoon on WYPR. We're taking your calls, if you like, 410-662-8780. Toll-free 866-661-9309. Or email us, for the shy folk, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And our central topic, unless there's other food questions that you have or wine questions that you have, our central topic is what's in your garden, what are you cooking with it, and also, what's in your garden and what is stumping you on what to do with it? And there are varying levels of expertise here at the table about gardening.
Some seriously varying level. Well, and this is the first year I bought a farm this year.
Yeah, you're farming now. That's why, Cindy, you always
farming.
see her with the straw hat and the kitchen now all the time.
I don't deserve anything near the word of that. So I have a small garden, and I am super, super excited about it. And one of the cool things is that Sam Malriot, who is one of our valets, has a degree from Cornell's Agricultural Department, which is amazing. So I got him to help me and a friend of his, Anthony, to build the beds on the property. I have 4 14-foot beds that are 2 feet wide. And one of the beds is extra deep so that we could do root vegetables. I love beets. And of course, I think I'm totally addicted to carrots. I think every time I walk into the walk-in at work, I pull a peeled carrot out of the bin. There are less dangerous addictions. Much less. So, I'm excited to talk about what other people's experiences are with gardening. You know, what questions do you have or advice do you have to give? Because, I mean, I have so much to learn, and it's a process, and it's been a really rewarding one. The day we planted the first seeds and to watch the plants come up and to see things that Sam had in the greenhouse that he seeded earlier in the year, to watch these things grow, for me as a chef to walk out into that garden in the morning and pick fresh herbs and walk into the restaurant and use them.
I asked you for a little basil.
Oh, my gosh.
And you came and gave me a shopping bag.
Not surprisingly, it's exciting.
A relatively fancy French shopping bag full of really aromatic basil. That was pretty entertaining. Only you would
bring the French shopping bag.
Yeah, but hey, you know.
It's so exciting. I mean, I can't imagine if you had children, what a great learning experience that would be for them to get to see this. I mean, even the smallest of children would probably, and I even looked up, Sam and I were talking about, you know, what the soil needs in order to really produce great things. And he was talking about the level of nitrogen. And, you know, I mean, it's been a long time since I went to school. So I forget the details of all photosynthesis and all these things. And again, I think those are great learning lessons. I mean, they're right in front of kids, and watch it happen and watch what the sun does and how it converts energy into, you know, plants, and it's cool.
Yeah, we live in opposite situations because you live with.
I live in the sun, and you live in the dark.
Big sunny fields. No. And while I've been called a vampire, I do not live in the dark.
You live in a woody area.
We live in a lot of mature trees around us.
Yeah, which is really beautiful.
It is, but it's a lot trickier to try to grow things.
Yeah,
there are a few herbs that will come along for us, but we don't have tremendous skill in that either. So it's kind of. If there's someone that does deal with a shade garden and does successfully produce from their garden for the kitchen, please give us a ring.
What have you been successful planting in your yard?
This particular variety of Greek basil.
Oh, good.
Mint, because mint doesn't ever stop growing.
Right.
Mint takes over the world. You
exactly.
know, that's mint and English ivy, it seems like, are the two things that will rule the world one day. But it's very difficult to get a lot of other things to really do much. You can rosemary does fine, but it still needs at least like an hour or two of dappled light, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to cut down a 400-year-old tree
to
grow a few herbs, but it's trickier. And I'm very curious if someone has good experience with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to reach us, it's 410-662-8780. Toll free is 866-661-9309. Or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. So, what is the best thing you've made from your garden so far? From not like just out of the earth, but like I walked in the kitchen with this X,
mm-hmm.
and I did this dish.
Mm-hmm. made, well, lemon verbena is one of my absolute favorite things in the world. And I even walk around with it in my chef pocket, because in my coat, because it just, it's so, you know, any sort of citrus oriented thing is so reviving to me.
You walk around with
herbs, lemon
herbs
verbena
in
my pocket? I do. And what's right by your nose, you can smell it really easily. So
I think you might get in trouble for that.
No. So I made lemon verbena oil. So lemon verbena is kind of odd in that you really can't eat it as the way that it is. It has little hairy things on its leaves, and they're not very desirable. So I gently pureed it very quickly, because it does lose its color pretty fast too. It must not have a lot of chlorophyll in it, And so when you go to puree it, you don't want that blender to get hot with the oil, so you want to make it fast. Just puree it with a little bit of, I would say, a very mild extra virgin olive oil, and I served it with a piece of halibut, a little bit of preserved lemon, and, you know, we had all kinds of fava beans and English peas and just a lot of green vegetables. Very, very pretty. Fish loves citrus, as we all know, so to have that very
so that,
pretty
that
lemon
that
verbena
citrus tone.
Yeah, was fantastic. And I also made sorbet with it. And I know a lot of the guys in the kitchen have had lemon verbena tea growing up. And you just, you know, you just steep it in hot and boiling water. You bring the water up to a boil. I do add sugar to it. So basically you're making a light, simple syrup. And just, it takes a lot of lemon verbena to steep to make any sort of volume. If you want to make a pint of, a quart of sorbet, you need probably, you know, a gallon bag full of really of lemon verbena.
So you better be committed to growing it.
Yeah, well, and you know
not
what?
A little pot.
That's the thing. I it's done so well. I think we had, actually my pastry chef found it, the plants up in Shrewsbury at a shop up there. And when she brought in a couple for me, because I had told her how much I loved lemon verbena, I said, okay, go buy everything they have. And I think she ended up bringing me about 18 plants, and Sam planted most of them. And they have just done, I mean, they're, you know, 10 times the size, 20 times the size, whatever they were originally. They're doing really, really well. They obviously like a lot of sunlight. Because that end of the garden gets, you know, sunlight from sunrise till the sun goes down. I have noticed that I made the mistake of planting, and I've always, you know, you and I have always had rosemary and lavender in our yards, and I have continued that feeling. I love having those plants, and they do want dry, and they definitely want a lot of sunlight. Obviously, they're Provençal herbs and do very well in that environment. Excuse me. I have noticed that my lavender is not doing well right now, because I have I do have a sprinkler on the garden, and it's getting too much water.
Yeah, that's
so that needs to be moved.
Yeah, usually you want that. And that I do know you usually do want elevated or on a hillside or, you know, some kind of a, it needs to drain well.
Mm-hmm.
And needs to keep his feet relatively dry.
Yeah. Yeah, which is nice to have things like that you can grow that don't need, especially in this hot summer.
So the things that, what I did not tell you yet today is we're starting to see tomatoes.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
From markets. So I'm curious
so
about the tomatoes that people grow, because some of the farmers have such different results. Some of the people that, because the spring was so unusual this year, some of the people on the Eastern Shore came early with some tomatoes.
Okay.
But they don't always have the most interesting, you know. Some of the ones in eastern Baltimore County are coming now, finally. But we've often relied upon some farmers in western Carroll County who get tremendous things and usually come a little bit after the eastern Baltimore County guys. But those tomatoes are way behind in the area. So I'm curious about what you're growing and what situations.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do with heirlooms?
Well, I can tell you right now that if whatever animal is eating mine, it keeps it up. Okay, I've had no deer in my garden. I should knock on wood right now. I have rabbits, but I've noticed my rabbits.
Are you charging these animals?
When I came back from France, my rabbits, I haven't seen them. So I think maybe my fox got my rabbits. But something is eating. I think I might have a gigantic groundhog.
I'm going to back you up. Do you have a pet fox?
No. He's not mine. Okay, he lives on my land. Jeez. So,
the rabbits are gone.
I have seen the fox. I have a single turkey. Well, maybe he has a friend somewhere, but for some reason he's roaming around by himself, which is really amazing. And but anyway, I think I have a groundhog that might be eating my tomatoes. And, you know, I'm just like, you know, if you're going to eat, take a big bite out of it. Could you just eat the whole thing?
Is there
you
anyone
know,
listening that can tell us if groundhogs eat tomatoes?
Please tell me what to do about my groundhog. It's either that or something else. So I hope that I will have heirloom tomatoes. And I forgot what the question was.
It's Baltimore
County.
What
am I going to do with it?
If you ever get any.
If I ever get any, I'm just going to make beautiful,
why don't you just serve the venison? Because it's surely the deer that is eating your tomatoes.
I don't think it is a deer. Okay, so wild venison with heirloom tomatoes, fresh rosemary, extra virgin olive oil, roasted garlic, and roasted shallots. No,
Let's just say it's next year, and you have venison sausage somehow.
Ooh, that would be good.
Yeah, in your freezer, and you take them out, and you grill those, and you have a nice heirloom tomato salad.
With a little roasted corn from somebody else's garden, because I'm not growing any of that.
No, that's a different kind of commitment.
Yeah, I don't have room for corn.
But you could be growing some sweet onions.
Mm-hmm. I could be, but I'm not. Oh, and the other thing, too, is you know, my squash is finally starting to come in, and I have a lot of flowers, which I'm just dumbfounded by. Oh, and I planted an artichoke. I have one artichoke growing in my garden. And I mean, it's just fascinating. The process
when you harvest the artichoke, are you going to announce it to the world?
One artichoke. I probably will.
What's your Twitter handle? I'm sure it'll be on Instagram. What's your Twitter handle so the world can know when the
It's just fascinating to see how they grow.
I'm totally serious.
I can't believe it.
I'm totally serious. I'm asking you for a commitment to announce on Twitter when your artichoke comes up.
I will. It'll be a big moment in my life. So I'll announce it on Twitter. Right next to, never mind. Anyway. So have you ever had a garden in your life? Is that something that you've done over time or your family had?
Once upon a time, I spent a lot of time. Well, I had family. My father's mother always had tomatoes that she grew.
Oh, good.
But just she grew, I think, mostly early boys.
That's funny.
And just relatively regular, like red beefsteak tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And their garden, in their little yard in Northwood. And I guess I'd helped someone in Lancaster, Pennsylvania with a pretty elaborate garden.
Over a couple of summers. Yeah, that's amazing.
And this was an Italian lady who wanted many things planted that she could no longer plant. And so
I was happy
to help with that. I think my love of beets came from that garden and parsnips and fennel and all different kinds of potatoes. And she gave me the devil to plant the right kinds of potatoes so she could make gnocchi, which was
nice.
I don't mind being bothered by that, especially if I'm going to learn exactly what to use and how to make proper gnocchi.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because when they're good, especially from the fresh ones, the fresh potatoes, you don't. It doesn't require that much flour, so it changes the recipe a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we're taking your calls, if you like, 410-662-8780, or your emails, formanwolf@wipr.org. And second segment, we'll try to bring on an agricultural expert, someone wants to give us a hand. And the third segment, I expect that we'll go into our chef's challenge, and this should be a pretty good one. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live this afternoon, taking your calls if you like, 410-662-8780, or toll-free 866-661-9309, or email us if you like, foremanwolf@wipr.org.
And we are full of energy. This is fun to talk about the garden.
Yeah, I think someone had coffee this morning.
I had too much coffee, in case you can't tell. Mm-hmm.
So we do have Sam on the line,
who is responsible for my garden. And he and I were out there this morning, and thankfully he is moving me forward, and it's been very exciting. And
Sam Mauriat is a graduate of Cornell's Agricultural School and can probably a lot more intelligently answer some of the silly questions that I have about what to plant and where.
Hey, Sam, how are you doing?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. Glad you're with us.
You hear me okay?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, great. So
what were you guys working on this morning? Just your tans?
Yeah, that's what Sam
really
and I do.
It's hot out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sun is real this time of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's no joke.
Yeah, we were yelling at the groundhog too, weren't we, Sam?
Yeah, just throwing stuff at him.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of took a walk around and talked about the things that look good and things that need work, and most of the stuff looks good.
So she needs to plant Cipollini onions for next year. Does she have a spot for that?
Oh yeah, plenty of room.
Well, and Sam, we were talking about a little bit about nitrogen and things like that. You want to go into, you know, what the earth really needs, what the plants really need to be productive in the garden, and sort of, you were talking about cover crops. So just talk a little
and
bit
also,
about that for me, please.
Sure.
I have a feeling that
I can do that, and
as an addendum to that, I have a feeling that a lot of people would like to work as naturally as they can in their gardens.
Right.
So
right.
How do they end up? Yep. How do you not get crushed by Japanese beetles, or you know, have all kinds of problems with pests if you're not using a lot of terrifying chemicals?
Right. So one of the nice things about organic gardening is that one of your goals is to try and build the soil. So you're trying to build that fertility over time so that it's innate in the soil. It's not something that you have to add synthetic fertilizer to, you know, year after year. And the primary way you do that is by adding organic matter to the soil. So in Chef Wolf's beds, you know, we added half and half compost and soil. And once you have that established and you have the beds built, then you want to continually be adding organic matter. And organic matter is just plant residue of any kind. So is not a bad way to get there, right? Because compost is already available. It's plant available, so they'll take that up right away.
So all those beet greens you never got around to cooking, or or carrot tops, and
yeah, typically you want to have a compost pile and break those down first before you add them to the garden. But if you're doing an organic garden, that's the one thing that you can do that'll really help everything. Is have organic matter add to the soil. So compost is pretty much the best way to go with that. And in terms of pest problems, it's different for every different kind of pest. So I'm not sure, you know, exactly which ones you're having problems with. But
the things I hear people cry about are Japanese beetles like crazy.
Right. So those are tough because. You know, in addition to not adding synthetic fertilizer, we're also sort of limited with organic gardening in what we can spray or you know, anything we can do to control pests. So
do you have to just, like, stop and talk to each individual beetle and try to get them to make decisions to choose something else to eat besides all of my cucumbers and all of my eggplants?
For Japanese beetles, well, actually, Chef has – we have, like, a little beetle trap, which I had never seen before. Chef, I think
it's working
Bobby
really
put
well.
That up. Yeah, it's working really well. Yeah,
Bobby, who works my land as well. we were talking, and I said, "Look, I've got all these beetles. They're eating my lemon verbena and my basil." And he said, "Well, I'll get some beetle traps." And yeah, he put that up, and I mean, immediately the beetles were running at it. So it really has improved.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you say stuff like that, I picture the mop tops like running towards a bad situation.
Yeah, so I had never seen that before, but it seemed to work pretty well. I guess it has some attractant, and then it has sort of a bag beneath that catches the beetles. But, you know, if you don't have that, you're going to have to go around and pick them off.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, depending on the size of your garden, that's the best way to reduce their population. So.
And you were also talking about the cover crop. So what do you think are the best things to do there to recover that nitrogen into the soil and other elements that are needed?
This is mostly a farm technique. Is you know, normally organic farmers that have, you know, 30 or 40 acres, they'll till everything up and they'll plant into it, and then you know, depending on what fields they need for the fall, they'll leave some. It's called leaving them fallow, and they'll plant a cover crop in it in September or October, and that cover crop will establish itself, and then. You know, it'll go into the winter nice and established. It'll die back a little bit, and in the spring it'll come back. And then they till that in the spring. and then that adds all of that organic matter back to the soil. So I like to do that for gardening. I think it works just as well. And, and so what I would do is if you, you know, if you just started a garden this year or you're still planting in a garden this year, and you see a little, you know, you're having some issues, then planting a cover crop would be a great way to go to restore the fertility. So, you know, cover crops are generally, they're, you know, they're not edible crops, but things like ryegrass and crimson clover, vetch is another type of crop. And these you can get at your, you can get it at, you know, local farm stores or Agway or, and you can just kind of seed it all over the beds and let it grow.
So we had problems with, you planted Crowder peas for me. Do you have any idea what happened to those plants? Because they were on, you know, we pulled those the other day.
Yeah, I think maybe that was actually a beetle issue.
Okay.
You probably had some pest problems there that did that. But
Well, the lima beans, well, it's interesting then because the lima beans right next to them look great.
Right, and that's just a matter of preference.
Okay.
You know, so some pests will latch on the things more than others, even if they're in the same family. So,
All right.
I think one thing that might help people have a little bit better time gardening might be having a little perspective. I know a lot of the farmers that I talk to just buying things from them over a lot of years for the restaurants, they know that everything's not going to work out, and they know they're going to take losses.
Right.
And they, if you really need X, then for God's sake, plant X times 1.2. You know, or depending upon what it is that you tend to take more or less losses on, or whether it's from hail or, you know, that's, I'm talking to my guy who often grows a lot of great eggplants for us this morning, and they had hail that just nailed that field. So it kind of looks like a lot of buckshot went through.
Wow.
Right.
You know, and they have, they just, they're not displayable, but they're probably great for roasting and that sort of thing. But, the skins are not so pretty on those guys.
Yeah. And that's one of the things you need to, you know, come to terms with pretty quickly when you have a garden is whatever you get from it, you can enjoy, you know, in some way. You know, maybe those eggplants can't be, you know, you can't use the skin on them in any way, and typically you don't, but you know, you can find a way to use anything that comes out of the garden. So
that's
what we're finding out this year.
I like that a lot. That's a great statement.
They're going to be cracked tomatoes this year.
Exactly.
You know, that's so
everywhere.
Hopefully there's some that aren't half eaten by the beasts.
Well, not
hopefully they're just
not in Cindy's garden.
Apparently
she
not.
Has ninja,
I'll be relying on
ninja deer taking them all.
Yeah,
because I know
deer.
It's not the groundhog.
Oh, I don't. I hope not. All right, because
the world's one tomato eating groundhog. I'm sorry. Does he smoke a pipe too?
Well,
I don't know.
So,
any
what do you think is the hardest thing to grow in this part of the country that people try to grow? And what do you think is the easiest thing that they don't think about to like plant and actually get production?
I think tomatoes are a lot harder to grow than people think. I mean, it you know, it depends on where you are, but I don't know specifically to this part of the country that tomatoes are difficult, but I know that they're just a difficult crop to grow because they're pretty finicky about water, about nutrient uptake, and about pruning and about trellising. So they take a lot of work, and if you can, you know, if you can do all of those things, you can end up with a pretty nice tomato crop. But if you neglect one of them, then you're in trouble most of the time. You'll see, you know, sort of if your tomatoes aren't trellised, they'll be on the ground, and then some of the leaves will turn brown and die, and that affects your yield in the end. And so I always found that tomatoes were a little more difficult than people anticipate, but cherry tomatoes are a good, you know, if you're just looking to get some fresh tomatoes without that much maintenance, cherry tomatoes are a great option because they're generally wild plants. You know, they're closer to the wild type of tomato.
Well, they're super abundant, and
right.
I know just the fact that the, you know, when if animals try to come and eat them, they're so abundant they'll eat some, and they kind of wander off. So you usually get some kind of yield, even if you have really pesky deer.
And it also looks like it puts obviously less stress on the plant because they're so tiny. So you probably have less breakage and all that too, right?
Right, yeah, and it's less frustrating, you know, when you're watching that one green tomato start to ripen and then somebody
you
comes
wanna,
and eat it.
Yeah.
The goal of gardening is to enjoy it, enjoy the production, not to be completely irritated all summer
long.
Yeah,
we might have to stop the irritation factor and put up some fencing soon,
right.
Sam.
Yeah, wow. I think you're right.
Yep. All right.
So, and the second, what was the second part of that?
What is that crop that you think people don't think of growing in this part of the country that should produce well, you know, and is not so tough to maintain that probably is underutilized?
Yeah, that's a good question. Generally, greens are very easy to grow. That's not necessarily what people want to grow, but it's a great way to get, you know, something fresh into your food or into whatever you're cooking. You know, things like salad mix or head lettuce, it's fairly easy to grow. Kale, broccoli rabe can be done fairly easily. Spinach is a little finicky, but greens like head lettuce and kale are great options, and they'll pretty much grow, you know, anytime you plant them or anywhere you plant them.
Two things I can use all the time are the lacinato, you know, that tusk, that what they call sometimes called black Tuscan kale, that's not a long production plant either.
Right. Yeah. Typically spring and fall.
And broccoli rabe is something, if you like pasta at all, that's very easy to do good things with.
Yeah, broccoli rabe is amazing. Good.
Right. Anything and one thing to keep in mind, at least if you're not, you know, spraying anything, which I wouldn't recommend, is, you know, anything that's sort of in that mustard or cabbage family. So so kale and broccoli rabe are in that family, or broccoli rabe and mustard or brassica family. Those need to get, in organic farming, we use our main pest control is row cover. So it's this white fabric. Sometimes you'll see it if you drive around the vegetable farm. It's a white fabric that we put over top of crops like that when they're young, and that prevents things like flea beetles. Actually, flea beetles are the main pests for brassica crops like that, and there's also cabbage worms. But that will prevent them from coming out at night and eating on the leaves. So that's something that people typically don't use for gardening, but it's a huge help.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like
something that I would recommend for that.
So maybe a last question, Sam, and I have a feeling we have a number of listeners thinking about this. What about effective and safe gardening if you're living in the city or have a city lot or sharing in a you know, community garden?
Sure. Yeah.
That's not exactly farming, but
yeah, no, but it's becoming increasingly popular. I actually just had a short talk with John Trunfeld, an extension agent from the University of Maryland, and he came out and we were talking about exactly that, safe farming, you know, in an urban environment. And we talked a lot about heavy metals and things like that. And
so concern number one is the soil quality and content, correct?
Right. And his recommendation there was anytime you have any soil that you're really not sure about is to build a raised bed and to fill it with soil that you know where it's from.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to help, you know, rectify most of the problems. And most plants, with the exception of carrots, don't really take up that many heavy metals anyway. So if you're concerned about that, then building a raised bed is a great way to sort of rectify that problem right from the get-go. And the other thing, so you know, once you have raised beds filled with soil,
when you say a raised bed, how much is it raised? How many inches off the ground?
8 to 12 inches is John's recommendation there. You know, 8 to 12 inches of soil would be great for any raised bed. And it creates enough of a barrier to keep it off of the soil beneath it. And the other thing I would recommend is if you are doing that and you're going to do some raised beds gardening, to kind of pack as much stuff in as you can in there at the same time, and then sort of thin it as you go. because one thing I've realized is that since your space is so limited, you really don't want to have any you know, bare soil there or you know, missed opportunities. So
right.
Overseed, overplant, you know, so you always have an option to plant something in, to replace it, to thin it.
Some things will fail, and diversity is going to make that soil stronger long term, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, there are plenty of options for urban gardens, but I would say that raised beds are a great way to get started.
Well, mm-hmm. Sam, hey, thanks for coming on with us.
Sam.
Thanks for all the intelligent answers for the amateurs over here.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good to talk with you.
You
have
enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, have a good Sunday.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. When we come back on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, Cindy and I have a chef's challenge coming up. Prior to that, we're happy to take your calls or questions or comments, 410-662-8780, toll-free 866-661-9309, or email us, foremanwolf@wipr.org. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live this afternoon. You can reach us with comments, questions about what you're growing in the garden. Do you know what to do with it? Do you have a great recipe for something you're doing with it? 410-662-8780, toll-free 866-661-9309, or reach us via email, foremanwolf@wipr.org.
That was great talking to Sam. He's amazing. I am so thankful for him. So I wouldn't have a garden if it weren't for him.
Yeah, you have a good situation to have expert assistance.
Yeah, he's awesome.
That's funny. I know so many people are gardeners. I watch them snatching up plants at the early farmers markets when the farmers bring all kinds of things in. And
it's a big thing. You know, many more people are planting things than they used to garden-wise.
Things this year that are going to be tricky are peppers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
did you plant peppers?
No, and I wish we did because I love habaneros and
get your seeds for padrones, you know.
Oh, yeah, I would love to plant padrones. The Russian roulette of peppers.
No, well, see, it should be like 1 in 10 if they're the right sort of level of maturity.
It's always the one I eat.
That's good for you.
Oh, and my lima beans are
flowering.
When Sam and I were in the garden this morning, they have the most beautiful little purple flowers. And there comes a lima bean. I can't wait.
I love lima beans.
Oh, my gosh. Lima beans, butter beans, crowder beans, all those
now,
things.
Now, if you plant padrones and you let them grow too long,
the color doesn't change
for a long time, but...
And then they turn red?
No, what happens is that instead of 1 in 10 being super hot, and the rest of them are mild, it becomes like 2, 3, 4. And there was one crop one farmer gave me, like, okay, I planted those peppers you wanted.
Uh-oh.
And it was like 8 in 10 would just take your face off.
Oh, my gosh.
So I served them to a party of a bunch of neighbors at my house.
You were pretty unpopular.
I roasted
after
them
that,
on
huh?
a plancha, and they're all just sweating. They're like, "This is great." I'm like, "Yeah," because I'd had a mild one. I had no idea what was going on. They're just dying.
They're like, okay.
I wonder why they drank so much.
We're never coming over to his house again. Excellent.
Well, so you're growing lima beans. What are you going to do with the limas?
Oh, well. I will definitely make succotash because it really is one of my... And I love corn so much, so...
So you say succotash, I say risotto.
Oh, well, I also make fava bean risotto, so I would make lima bean risotto as well.
Yeah.
Definitely, for sure. And if I was going to make lima bean risotto, I would put a little bit of fresh rosemary in with a very light chicken stock and add a little bit of lemon and finish with Reggiano because those lima beans are going to love a little cheese. I also was thinking about making a goat cheese salad with some of the lettuces from the garden and having lima beans in as a garnish on the salad, nice and cold, and then maybe a little bit of lardon, so some tiny little pieces of crispy bacon in the salad.
Yeah, there's no butter,
so
there must be pork.
That would be so good. Right? Exactly. So that would be delicious. And make a simple, you know, citrus vinaigrette or even one of the herb vinaigrettes from the garden. So, I mean, the first... piece of zucchini I picked was an eight ball squash. And I was having guests over for dinner that night, and I went to go ahead and dice it for dinner to do the prep. And I took a slice of it off and ate it. And I swear it tasted like a piece of fruit. It was so, I mean, I just picked it. It was so amazing. That's what's just so exciting about it.
People like things out of the garden.
Whew, yummy.
So we have a caller on the line, Amy in Narsville, with a few tips for organic remedies for pest control.
Amy,
how are you?
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
So what have you got to stop pests?
Well, I can't claim ownership of this because I found it researching it on the illustrious internet, but there is a hot pepper spray that one can concoct using either, the recipe actually called for hot pepper powder, but I use just hot pepper sauce, getting the least expensive possible. And then you put a mixture of hot pepper sauce in with water and a little bit of dish soap. Mm. And some recipes also call for mint extract, but I also had dropped that, feeling it was a little extravagant. But anyway, so the mixture is approximately a quarter cup or a third of a cup of the hot pepper sauce to a 5-gallon watering can, and or spray bucket or whatever, to 3 to 5 gallons, and then just a few dabs of dishwashing liquid. And then I actually just pour it using an old-fashioned watering can, and just pour it over my vegetable garden, especially the beans and the cabbage and the broccoli. Now,
do you find that it makes your cucumbers
aware of rain, because it will just wash it right off?
Sure.
But it's really good for keeping those yellow bugs away.
Yeah. I have those on my zucchini plants. I just saw those this morning. Sam and I were talking about it.
Right, and if you actually invest of course in a spray. A sprayer, then you can get under the leaves better. I'm just a little bit lazy with my whole thing. I just water them.
I was also told, now that you said that, I was also told to do that to keep the deer away.
Well, I understand that it could keep the deer away.
Okay.
So and then I also plant the ends of all of my garden rows. I plant marigolds, nasturtiums, and zinnias, all of which tend to keep invasive pests, bugs away.
That's great. Yeah. Well, thank you so
Amy,
much.
Amy, thanks for the great tips.
Yeah, thank you. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you
very much. So I think
that's good.
I think we're coming up on time for Chef's Challenge.
I think so. Let's do it.
If there is, let's
go first. Go,
no, ladies first.
Oh, okay. God, look at this
ladies
page
first.
You're giving
yeah.
me. Okay. All right.
That's,
so
come on, that's as good as my handwriting gets. You
oh
know
boy,
this.
One bottle of Sancerre Rosé. You gave me wine to drink while I'm cooking. Yes,
I just want your attitude.
That's a real Sunday.
I just want your attitude.
You want me to have
to
a positive attitude?
Yeah. if you're going to deal with this, you're going to have to do it.
Oh,
in
I love
positive
it. You
way.
Give me 6 years of white corn, 4 each heirloom tomatoes, a black crème, a mortgage lifter, great white, and I can't read this, something orange.
A manna orange. Mm. It's one of those old varieties out of West Virginia from like the 1920s.
Yummy. All right, a bunch of cilantro. Ooh, pickled Calabrian chilies, 2 pounds of, oh, that's funny, 2 pounds of Maryland lump crab meat, 6 each scallops in the shell with roe, the Castelvetrano olives, which are one of my favorites, Chioggia beets, ricotta, which is made with fresh goat's milk, and then full pantry, full dairy. Okay, so let's see. All right, so crab meat. Oh, I love crab meat. All
first,
right,
I have a glass of the Sancerre Rosé.
Yeah, I'm drinking that right now, pretending. All right, so I'm going to roast the white corn. So I roast the corn in a tusk at 350 degrees. It takes about 35 to 40 minutes in a non-convected oven. You do want to pull any of the extra hair, what's that called, the tassel off, because it might catch on fire in the oven.
You mean the tassel from the end.
Yeah, so yeah. Just pull that off. Otherwise, you're good to go. And so I'm going to roast that corn and the crab meat. I'm absolutely making crab cakes. So I'm going to garnish my crab cake with all the tomatoes. this is going to be pretty much all one dish. So the Calabrian chilies that were pickled will garnish the four different types of sliced. Actually, you know, I won't slice all the tomatoes. The smaller ones I quarter to give you a real sense of the entire feeling of the tomato from outside to inside, from top to bottom. And then some of the bigger tomatoes I'll slice. I think these are all probably pretty big sized tomatoes.
Yeah, they're all pretty big
guys. So different shapes also give you a visual. The cilantro will be garnished. The Calabrian chilies will be garnished. Extra virgin olive oil. I'll roast the chioga beets until they're nice and tender, and add those to the salad. The crab meat, actually, I'm not going to make crab cakes. I'm just going to make a little crab salad with it. So what I'll do is I'll mix the crab meat with the white corn, a tiny bit of mayonnaise, and actually I'll add the cilantro to that as well, salt and pepper, a little bit of salt and pepper, just a tiny bit, and a little bit of lemon to that salad. Obviously the rosé would be really, I think that would be good. Would that be good with all that, Tony?
Yeah.
And then the scallops, and I have olives and ricotta. So, I'm going to put the ricotta on that salad, just sort of scatter it around. That will be great with the beets and the tomatoes for that matter. The olives, I can't put scallops and olives together. So I'm just going to eat the olives while cooking and the guests are in the area.
You have a chef's aperitivo in Castelvetrano olives. And
the scallops, I love the scallops in a shell, and it's great that it has the roe. So I'll steam those open, and I'm going to use a little bit of the rosé to steam them open. And since I have a full pantry, I'll add a little bit of shallot to the pan and just let those work and steam open. And then I will then reduce the shallots and the rosé, add a little bit of cold butter to it, and make a sauce for those scallops in the shell. And I might reserve a little bit of tomato for that as well. The black creme would be great with those scallops.
There's a little more acidity. So
yes,
that's kind of
so I might just do a small dice of the black creme and sort of scattered it over the top of the scallops with the sauce. And that might be pretty good. That's it.
Sounds like fun stuff.
Okay. And that's yours, all right. Tony.
Let's see. That was speedy.
I am speedy.
You didn't do it. I guess the summer cooking.
I talk too fast.
Summer cooking,
and I work
that
as
coffee.
Fast as possible.
It's that coffee. All right. Yeah. I just.
It's
zucchini. Honeydew melon. All right. Heirloom tomato. Basil, thyme, baby lettuces, red romaine, butter lettuce. Lima beans, crowded peas. 7 pounds of whole local rockfish. Or a 7 pound whole local rockfish.
A 7 pound. Right. Yeah, a whole rockfish.
Extra virgin olive oil, jumbo lump crab, lemon verbena, lemon lime.
And you can say you have full pantry and dairy as well. I think that just makes sense. And all that grows in my garden except the crowded peas didn't work. And, of course, not the seafood.
Okay. The, I'd like to take those zucchini and make something that almost looks like a cannelloni with the zucchini ribboned out and then very, very, very thin,
mm-hmm.
Just seasoned with lemon and salt. And inside, make a salad with the lump crab and limes, especially the young, tender limes.
Sure.
And just a little bit of heirloom tomato and hoping that they're... maybe a couple of shallots in the pantry,
mm-hmm.
but and maybe like the tiniest drop of soy and sneak it in there, and tuck that inside the just literally roll that inside and kind of lay out the cannelloni, and maybe not the way, not the long way, but the short way, but like the ribbon unfolded on the plate,
yeah,
so it's spilling the salad out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that'd be a fun sort of first course,
and that's cold.
And that's
so
cold.
The zucchini's raw.
Right, that's raw.
I love raw
zucchini. I'm just thinking of not heating up the kitchen on a day like honestly.
Oh, I love raw zucchini. When it's fresh out of the garden, why not?
Absolutely. The verbena, I'd love to make a sorbet. Mm-hmm. And what I wish I had was a little bit of feta cheese.
Okay.
Because I love...
Poof, you have feta cheese.
Poof. See, thank you. Thanks for going to market. The because I like to make a salad with the heirlooms and the honeydew. And make a little bit of not very sweet lemon verbena sorbet and serve those guys together with the fish. What I'd like to do is just the crowders, cook those guys in a vegetable stock or a mushroom stock. Actually, it would be nice. You can take the rockfish and bone it out and make a quick fish stock. And cook the crowders till they're almost done, finish them in the fish stock, bring it down so it's almost like a sauce. And then the rockfish that you cut into fillets, sear those in a pan, and plate them on, and if you have a grill as well, you could grill off the red romaine, and you have a plate with the grilled red romaine, just a little bit of the, like a nage with the crowder peas,
mm-hmm.
and the seared rockfish, and use a little bit of, just a little bit of extra virgin and a little bit of the citrus to dress that.
Sounds good.
If you could, yeah, and some of the fresh thyme in with the crowders as you get that done. I guess I'm left with butter lettuce for tomorrow.
There you go. That's fine. So we have an email here from Elizabeth, and she says, I grow Japanese eggplants and always had trouble with flea beetles until I began using a spray made from garlic and chilies. I steep a bulb worth of garlic and a few hot chilies and spritz my babies till the leaves toughen. Keep extra in the fridge. Works great. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. That's awesome.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
I guess rain is the enemy of these kinds of sprays.
Right. Well, that makes sense. You have to keep working at it, but if it works, it works. That's great, as long as it's organic.
And so we have one other email from Amy about companion planting. Just wanted to contribute and mention that I have a plot in the city farm at Leakin Park and have a great success this year with companion planting, some of the favorites being a corner with sunflowers, dill, and cucumbers. That just makes me want a cucumber salad with dill. A patch with tomatoes and basil underplanted with nasturtiums, and beans surrounded by calendula and greens. Companion planting is a great thing to do with small spaces and help the plants to support each other organically. And like we talked about with Sam, that diversity is going to make that soil stronger over time.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of wine is on your mind right now?
Besides all the rosés in the world, I think. I mean, besides just good dry rosé, whether it's from the south of France or it's from Washington State, from Airfield, they have a terrific, inexpensive rosé that's delicious. South America is a bit on my mind right now. I think there's white wine from Torontes in Argentina that's delicious, but some of the reds, I guess, with some grilling and with some meats and some like game birds. I've had recently a couple of Bernarda Malbec blends from Argentina that were terrific. I've been thinking about just like what are the young, fresh, has good fruit in the summer. It's funny, I don't want to drink as many mature wines in the summer. I want to drink things that are driven by like big fruit, big structure.
Sure.
And then some of the excellent Carmenere that's coming out of Chile.
Okay, good.
These days, which is Carmenere is that grape it's like the fifth Beetle. It's actually the sixth Bordeaux red grape. But those are things to check out these days.
I'm going to interrupt you. Can you tell us how do you properly send back a bottle of wine?
Well,
really fast.
If you don't like it, you shouldn't drink it. That's kind of first and foremost.
Right.
I mean, I would hope it's being served at the right temperature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of those things that, in the right temperature, should be for red wine a little cooler than room temperature, and for a white wine a little bit warmer than refrigerator temperature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're both pretty easy to adjust, but if a red wine is at room temperature, that's tough. So sometimes it's hard to taste. But if it's something's flawed, like it has a cardboardy aroma like cork, but main thing is if you don't like it, don't drink it. It's okay.
That's right. Okay.
Thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Our producer, engineer, and the guy that saves us on a regular basis is Luke Spignall.
We love him. Also known
as Luca Spignelli. Have a great Sunday.
Take care. Bye-bye.